On this week's episode of At 88 Problems in Sports 81 podcast, brought to you by theohiosportsblog.com, Charles and I will break down victories by both the Buckeyes over Indiana and your Cleveland Browns over Baltimore Ravens in overtime at First Energy Stadium. That's right, folks. You heard it. The Browns got their second win of the year at First Energy Stadium over an AFC North opponent. Their first win over the AFC North since 2015. And the Browns got it today 12-9 in overtime. Charles and I talk about the entire game, the refereeing, how they almost stole another one from us. Baker's play, Baker, what Baker brings to the team offensively and the defensively, and all the great pieces we have in place there, and what a great job John Dorsey is doing. So get ready. Brownies 2-2-1. Buckeyes undefeated, number 3 in the country. Let's go. 88 Problems of Sports A1 podcast is brought to you by NCSD Apparel. They can be found on Twitter at NCSD_apparel. They were established this year in 2018. They make t-shirts from the 330. Represent Northeast Ohio everywhere you go with shirts from NC Sports Design. You can shop now at ncsportsdesign.com. They have a promo code NCSDNEW at checkout. Get 20% off your purchase for any new followers. That's NCSDNEW at checkout to get 20% off your purchase if you're a new follower. They have a great new shirt. Go to their Twitter site right now. They have a shirt. They have a Muni Lot shirt. I'm ordering this thing, getting 20% off right when we're done by entering the code NCSDNEW at checkout. All right, Charles, the Buckeyes back in the Big Ten action against the Hoosiers at Ohio Stadium, beat them 49-26. Probably a little closer than a lot of people expected, but your thoughts on the game?
You know, it wasn't pretty for the first three quarters, you know, or at least the first two quarters. Indiana's always a team that's played us tough the last few years, so I'm not surprised that they were in that game, and especially after coming off another emotional win at Penn State. It just seems like the team was emotionally drained, and the secondary was getting burned a lot in that game. But Dwayne Haskins ended up coming through and making the plays, and I think he cemented himself as a leading Heisman candidate.
Yeah, it's always tough coming off. They came off a big win last week against Penn State where they had to come back from a couple touchdowns down in a whiteout game against the top 10 team. So, yeah, I'm sure it's hard to get back up for another game the following week. And but the Buckeyes took care of business. Like you said, Haskins made plays. I mean, the guy was 33 or 44, 455, 6 touchdowns, did throw 2 interceptions, but – I mean, 455 is a lot of yards.
I mean, a couple more yards, and he would have broken Art Schlitter's single-game record for most passing yards in a game. So I was a little mad that they kneeled it down at the end. I wanted to see him break that record and get a 7th touchdown pass.
Yeah, that would have been nice. But along with Haskins, Dobbins had 26 carries for 82 yards and a touchdown. And Weber had 13 carries for 70 yards. So that's 39 carries for 152 yards. That's pretty nice balance there in offense between the running and the passing.
Yeah, the Buckeyes running backs definitely looked good in this game, especially J.K. I mean, the man can cut like nobody else. I think it's a hot take right now, but I think he's honestly better than Zeke was when Zeke was there. And don't get me wrong, Zeke was a great running back. But Zeke didn't make those one-handed catches that you see J.K. Dobbins out there making. I mean, that's what's impressive to me about Dobbins is not only is he an insanely good runner, but he's also insanely good in the pass game. I mean, there's a few one-handed catches that he's made, and I've just been amazed by it.
Yeah, I think Dobbins projects to the next level, kind of almost like a Le'Veon Bell type back, a Saquon Barkley type back, where you can get them the ball 30 times a game. And it's not the old traditional Adrian Peterson 30 times a game. It's not smashing them between the tackles. It's getting them out on the edge, running, and also flipping them some flare passes and screen passes and You can even get these guys out in the route, too, because, like you said, Dobbins can make some catches, and he can run real routes, just not like screens and shovel passes and things like that. But, yeah, he's a dimension to that offense that a lot of people just don't have.
Yeah, and you know what? I love the Le'Veon Bell comparison because I think they're very similar. Le'Veon Bell is often known as a very patient runner. He waits for his holes to open up. If you watch J.K. a lot, J.K. also does the same thing. He waits for those holes, and he makes those quick cuts. And that's led to a lot of his big plays because he's such a patient guy in space. So, you know, you get him out in space and he's dangerous. So yeah, JK. And then another guy that we should talk about, how about Paris Campbell, 9 catches for 142 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, what a game this guy is, what a stretch this guy is on.
For sure. I mean, like you said, 9 catches. He's always being like right now he's got 35 catches, 500 yards, 7 touchdowns, averaging 14.3 yards a catch. That's projecting to be some pretty good numbers for Paris Campbell. And like you said, he's got some speed also on the outside. I was just watching a highlight where they ran him one like a wheel route and he's wide open and nobody's gonna touch him. That was a 71-yard touchdown pass he caught from Haskins. But they're also not only did Paris have 9 catches, and he's obviously coming out as their number one guy that you're going to get a lot of touches to. But also, Johnny Dixon, KJ, or Austin Mack both had 5 catches. KJ Hill, Terry McLaurin, 4 catches apiece. So they're still, even though Campbell's getting 9 catches for 142, they're still spreading the ball out and around to various guys that can blow open a game. Because I think we've seen in the past where McLaurin's had that 9-catch game. And so every one of these guys has the ability to have that 9-10-catch game for 150 yards and be the number one guy that day because they spread it around and nobody is a forgotten receiver.
Yeah, they definitely spread it around. And I think that's a testament who they have at quarterback. It's definitely a more pass-oriented offense with Haskins back there. And you're totally right. I mean, any one of these guys can do what Campbell did in that game and have 9 to 10 plus catches, over 100 yards and a couple of touchdowns. Paris Campbell separates himself from them though, because he's their guy in the short passing game, the guy that they like to get out in space because he does have that game breaking speed. And I'll tell you what, I would pay to see a race between him and Kendall Sheffield, because Kendall Sheffield's easily one of the fastest guys out there as well. One of the guys I wanted to hit on was Terry McLaurin. He's done so much to improve in the last like 2 years. Like he is a complete receiver. Like route running, blocking, catching the ball, and then catching touchdowns. I mean, he seems to be Dwayne Haskins' favorite receiver when they get down in the red zone like that. And then how about Benjamin Victor, man? That insane acrobatic catch. Did you see that for the touchdown?
I did not. I missed that one. I think I was flipping through channels when that one happened. But I've heard about it and I've seen it on highlights and everything else. The athleticism was unreal.
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. I mean, this kid, he's gonna be one of the few left after all these other guys leave, because Paris Campbell's going to be gone after this year. Johnny Dixon will be gone after this year. Terry McLaurin, KJ Hill, they're all going to be gone. And guess who's going to be left standing? Mr. Benjamin Victor, who is an absolute size matchup problem for any defense out there. He's 6'4". It definitely seems like he's learned – he's slim – but he's definitely put on more weight, so he's definitely learned how to use that weight. And he's not the fastest guy out there, but he's shifty. So a lot of the times when you see him make a play, it's the way he's shifty out in space. So to see him do that, and to see him also to be that type of guy that can go up and get it. I mean, Ohio State has needed somebody like that for the last few years, and it looks like we finally have that.
Yeah, and throwing to big receivers like that, 6'4", 6'5", guys, just gives your quarterback just that much more room for error because they have such a big catch radius. But a quick story about Paris Campbell and his speed. I was at a track meet. He was running 200 when he was at St. Vincent St. Mary's there in Akron. And he was coming down the backside. He made the turn, was coming down 100. And I was watching him run, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that if I stepped out in front of him right now and just took it, he might be able to kill me. I mean, the guy just – Well, I bet the guy was motoring. He had to be going, I don't know, 17, 18 miles an hour. He was just flying down the track. It was a pretty impressive thing to see.
Yeah, his speed is unreal. And you know what? I think he's playing with a definite chip on his shoulder this year with the way that, you know, that I some site on Twitter came out with a list of the fastest college football players or like the top five. And Paris Campbell wasn't even up there. And, you know, Paris Campbell, like, retweeted with a comment on that, and he felt slighted on that. So I think he's out there, and he's proven exactly why that tweet was dead wrong. You know, he's definitely one of the fastest guys on the team, if not the fastest. I mean, I really do want to see a race between him and Kendall Sheffield because, you know, Kendall Sheffield's got blazing speed too.
Yeah, and like they say, there's a difference between straight-ahead track speed and football speed, and Campbell definitely has the football speed. But switching to the other side of the ball, a lot of people will say they can't believe Ohio State gave up 26 points to Indiana. But, I mean, coming off that Penn State game, the defense, and they're still playing without Bosa. So the defense, you know, they gave up 26. They still won by 23. I think I read on something maybe The Athletic today, the 23-point win is Ohio State's letdown game. So if that's their letdown game, they're going to be okay still winning by 23 points.
Yeah, and you talk about how I think we miss Nick Bosa, you know, and this is not the homer in me saying, but Chase Young was held a lot in that game. If you watch that entire game, you could watch Chase Young had a beat on their left tackle that entire game, and he was just being held so much, and the refs just were not calling it. And it seems like we get those mistakes a lot, but you know what? The Buckeyes didn't capitalize it on enough, and honestly, they got hurt in the secondary a lot. I mean, I'm a little concerned about this secondary right now because they're getting beat up, and they're getting beat up early.
Yeah, the secondary is giving them. They gave up 323 yards passing to Peyton Ramsey, three touchdowns. You know, the receivers, Indiana had two receivers over 100 yards. The secondary, it's kind of in flux a little bit because – you have guys who haven't played there before because, you know, Ohio State's developing these secondary guys so fast that they're leaving early. They're all leaving early, so it's hard for them to get veteran depth in the secondary. So their secondary is getting baptized by fire, if you will, because they're all, you know, a lot of first-year starters in the secondary.
Yeah, I think a lot of the first-rounders we've been putting out is finally coming back to bite us because, like you said, we got a lot of young guys out on the field, and a lot of them are taking bad angles on plays and, you know, missing assignments. I mean, Damon Arnett especially. I mean, the guy's a third-year guy and a second-year starter, and he's still giving up big plays. I mean, I can't say I haven't watched a game where Damon Arnett does not get beat, and I still continuously believe that Sean Wade should be out there instead, but you know what? The Buckeyes keep sending him out there, and that's because Ohio State they rarely bench players, so they're going to let them play. And like you said, they're being baptized by fire, so they got to learn on the move. I'm just glad that they're making the mistakes now, and hopefully they get corrected as the season goes on.
Yeah, I was just looking at their depth chart. Three juniors and a sophomore in the defensive backfield. And they're all backed up by freshmen, redshirt freshmen, sophomores, and freshmen. So, yeah, they have a lot of, like you said, they have a lot of young kids back there because, like, Denzel Ward left early last year. There's a guy, if he had stayed, I mean, we see what he's doing for the Browns right now, but if he had stayed for Ohio State, I mean, there's a senior defensive back that would be locking down half the field. So, you know, and I think it does catch up to you in a way because, you know, as good as these guys are, and they're really good players, you know, it takes a while to get that veteran knowledge and things that you need along with the athleticism to be a really good defensive back.
Yeah, and, you know, you were saying how Denzel Ward locked down half the field. I think that guy this year has been Kendall Sheffield so far, but late in that game you even saw him getting beat. But I think that was more so of him being tired from – actually covering everybody all day long and the other guys not doing their jobs. I think that was a more testament to them than it was on him. Cause honestly, I still think Kendall Sheffield is definitely that lockdown guy. I think he's a potential first round pick. If we can get it together. And then you also we also got a problem there at the other safety spot. Cause opposite Jordan Fuller, it's, looking pretty iffy there. I mean, Isaiah Pryor had to miss the entire first half. And when he came back, the safeties played a little bit. He did play a little bit better, but he's still, I mean, I know he's a sophomore, but he's still taking bad angles as a safety in that. And you can't do that. And that's got to be fixed. I mean, we're 6 games into the season now, and it's still apparent that he's taking bad angles.
Yeah. And it's nice that, like this next stretch of games for the Buckeyes, they have Minnesota. They're at Minnesota. Purdue comes to the Shoe, and then they're at Nebraska before they travel up to East Lansing from Michigan State. That's a nice stretch of games there where they can get a lot of guys in the game, get some more experience for them, and correct a lot of the mistakes on the defensive side because they're going to be 30-35 point favorites in all of those games. So. And Haskins will throw the ball over the field, and the Buckeyes will score at least 50 a game. So they're going to have a chance to get a lot of guys, defensive players in the game and offensive players in the game, to help build that depth for later in the year when they go to Michigan State, and then they play in the big game there the Thanksgiving weekend against the TTUN and then into the playoff if they continue to win.
Yeah, definitely. I actually happen to think that Purdue game is a huge track game for this club right now. I mean, if they don't have their good stuff in that game, Purdue could put some points up on us. I mean, they have that explosive young freshman who's just been putting up gaudy stats. And you know what? If the secondary lets him get open like they let some of Indiana's receivers get open, and you got to remember too, Indiana was missing a couple of their receivers in that game. So that's what really concerned me. So if you get an explosive freshman like that and the explosive type of offense that their head coach at Purdue runs, you know, that's definitely a trap game. So we got to be careful that we don't take these opponents lightly. I know we took Indiana a little lightly. That was because we're off an emotional win. But I'm hoping that now that we've got that off our chest, now we'll start to roll a little bit more and we'll get a little bit more serious about perfecting our craft. And like you said, I really think they need to run the table and win out, because the rest of the Big Ten is honestly, it's just trash this year. I mean, Michigan State lost again. I mean, to Northwestern. I mean, and they're a team that's just been giving up leads this year. So I think Ohio State, in order to make the playoffs, they got to win out.
Yeah, there's a big you know, they have Michigan, who has a huge one this weekend at home against Wisconsin. And Ohio State will play Michigan, and they'll probably end up playing Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game if it gets that far. But that's the bad thing about that crossover game, is it'd be nice if Michigan would come into that last game there with one loss and then be ranked high, and then Wisconsin could come into the game with one loss, the Big Ten title game, one loss, ranked in the top 10. You know, that's two big wins for them right there, but they play each other, so one of them is going to get knocked down a little bit. I think just looking at schedules and looking at what's going on right now, there's 5 undefeated teams right now: Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, and Notre Dame. And I think the Alabama and Georgia will definitely probably play for the SEC title in the title game. So one of them will have a loss, but I think being undefeated this year is going to be paramount. As far as getting in the playoffs, because I don't think there's 4 undefeated teams are going to have to take them. They won't be able to. There's no way you can justify a one-loss SEC team going into the playoff over an undefeated Power 5 team, in my opinion.
I completely agree there. If they do that, then it'll just show favoritism towards the South, which the committee has been accused of a lot. I mean, we saw a lot of that with the BCS. Was people were complaining that there's too much bias towards the South. And if that happens, where you have a one-loss SEC team and an undefeated conference champion like Ohio State, you know, and you put the SEC team in over them, I mean, I'm honestly would feel slighted in that. And I would want to see why. I would want to know what possible reason could – I don't think there's any possible reason they could give that would justify doing that. One thing I wanted to hit on, because you were mentioning Wisconsin, was I don't know how much you follow PFF, Pro Football Focus, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty criminal how Alex Hornibrook of Wisconsin is continuously ranked higher under PFF's PFF over Dwayne Haskins. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know how they do their rankings, but I mean, I think if you ask any general manager in the NFL who you take, Hornibrook or Dwayne Haskins, I think it's 32-32, Dwayne Haskins. I mean, Hornibrook, I mean, I don't know how, like I said, I don't know how they do their rankings, how they do their grading or what have you, but that just seems to me, it's obviously not, you know, projection to the NFL or who's better, because like Haskins has got to be in the top one or two for the Heisman. And Hornibrook, Hornibrook is nowhere to be mentioned. So, I mean, to me, that's just put out. I don't even know why they put that out, but it's insane to me.
The stats are not comparable. I mean, if you look at some of the stats, you know, Dwayne Haskins is at the top or in the top two in Power Five teams in yards per game, touchdown passes. Maybe the only thing Hornibrook might have over him is completion percentage, but I don't even think he has that because the quarterback for Indiana was the leading guy in the conference for completion percentage coming into that game. So I mean, it's just crazy. You know, I don't know how. I agree. I don't know how they do their rankings, but you know, it's absolutely insane. And I think you're right. You know, 32 out of 32 would say Dwayne Haskins. I mean, he's already had pro scouts at his games. I mean, he's probably going to be gone after this year. So we just got to enjoy him while we got him.
Yeah. Right now, like if I was asked and pressed for it, and somebody asked me what the five guys I put up for the Heisman, I'd have to go Tua down in Alabama, Haskins, the guy at Oklahoma, Murray, probably Will Greer, and I don't even know a fifth one. I don't even know if you need to put a fifth one out there just because it's going to be one of those four guys, in my opinion.
Yeah, if you could put a fifth one out there, I'm thinking, oh my God, he's on the tip of my tongue and now I can't remember. Well, anyways, you know, Tua is definitely in it. You know, he needs to have it. He hasn't had his Heisman nomi yet. I mean, Dwayne's had two of those. Tua has been mostly playing in blowout. So I that's why I honestly think that Dwayne Haskins is in the lead because he's already had his Heisman moments and Tua hasn't. Will Greer's definitely got to be in this discussion. Kyler Murray is definitely in the discussion too. And honestly, the Texas quarterback, if he could
Erlinger,
Erlinger or something like that. Yeah. He could possibly be in it late, with the game that he had against Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. But you know, I definitely think top four right now is Tua, Dwayne Haskins, Will Greer and, Kyler Murray.
Yeah. Well, just to go back to your point about Haskins versus Hornibrook, here's a couple stats for you. Haskins, 142 for 198 for 71.7% completion percentage, 19 yards, 25-4 TDs interceptions. Compared to Hornibrook, 73 of 114, 64%, 963, 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. So, I mean, I don't know what they're grading on or if they're grading week by week or what they're doing, but, I mean, those stats don't even compare.
Even if you grade it week by week, it's still not comparable. I mean, Dwayne Haskins has been elite week by week. I mean, maybe not for an entire game. I mean, because we saw him struggle in the first half against TCU, and we saw him kind of struggle against Penn State. But you know what? The offense opened up, and he throws one of the most accurate deep – I mean, he's accurate in general, but he throws one of the most accurate and beautiful deep balls I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he's got – I know he's got – on here, there's long at 75, and I know he threw a 70-yarder to Paris Campbell this weekend. So he's got at least a couple 70-yard and above, whereas Hornibrook's long one is 44-yard. So, I mean, to compare – I think, in my opinion, to compare – Hornibrook and Dwayne Haskins is unfair because they're in two different offenses. They're asking Hornibrook to manage the offense, where Ohio State's basically asking Haskins to go lead the offense and win the offense. Like, Wisconsin and Hornibrook aren't going to win unless their running back gets 30 carries for 150 yards. I mean, that's just
exactly
that's just what it is. And if Hornibrook has to drop back and throw the ball 35 times, Wisconsin gets beat 10 out of 10 times.
Exactly. And you know what? Another thing that I wanted to hit on, going back to the defense for the Buckeyes, the linebacker play has been much improved since the second half of the Penn State game. I mean, they played a really good game against Indiana. You know, I'm impressed with them. As much as I'm worried about the secondary, I'm not so worried about the linebackers anymore.
Yeah, they came to play, and they showed that they got better from the week before, and that's just good coaching by the linebacker coach there. I can't even, is it Shiano? Shiano the linebacker coach, or is he safeties?
He's no, Shiano's the defensive coordinator. Bill Davis is the linebacker coach.
So I mean, that's a compliment to him that they got better from week to week, especially coming off that emotional Penn State game. But speaking of emotions, Charles, we're back. The Brownies got their second home win. It wasn't pretty, but we got it.
That game was absolutely insane. I mean, I swear to God, I was literally on my knees begging for a win. I mean, it feels like at every turn, the refs were trying to take that game from us. I mean, for the Ravens to not have a penalty until, what was it, about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter is absolutely ridiculous. And to have 12 penalties already called on the Browns, that's a completely one-sided thing. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was 12-0 at one point. Like you said, in the fourth quarter, it's about 4 or 5 minutes to go. I mean, you can call – there's two calls in football that are judgment calls and could be called – like you say, it can be called every play, and it legitimately can be called every play. One is holding, and one is illegal contact on the receiver, and we'll get to that one in a little bit. But, I mean, to not have a hold in the NFL against an elite pass rusher like Myles Garrett I mean, I don't know who the left tackle is, but he should probably start putting his bust in the Hall of Fame right now because he's going to end up there. But I mean, Myles Garrett. I think he had one or two sacks, but for him to only have one or two sacks and them not to have any penalties, either he was taking plays off or they were holding the crap out of him, and I think it was the latter.
He was absolutely mauling their left tackle. He should have had way more than the sacks that he had in that game. If you watch, he was held so many times and it just wasn't called. But everywhere you turn, the Browns were getting called for holding. So it's a little, you know, conspicuous there by the NFL refs, you know, almost screwing us 2 weeks in a row. And it's a little ridiculous. That being said, you know, for Baker Mayfield to show that kind of moxie at the end of the game, you know, to lead the teams down the field in the face of some of that pressure that he was getting, you know, and so many penalties going against him is absolutely impressive. And it seems like Cleveland finally has their quarterback.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the difference between Njoku with Kaiser last year and first part of Tyrod Taylor and Njoku with Baker Mayfield is unbelievable. I mean, the guy – He's making a lot of plays because the ball is where it needs to be and on time, and he knows the ball is going to be there. He's not going to have to wait for it or, you know, adjust his body too much. The ball is going to be right where it needs to be, and it's going to come out quick. And I think that's another thing that Baker helps the Browns with is the ball comes out so fast from his hand. It's just he helps the pass protection. Because the pass protection doesn't have to hold for 4 to 5 seconds like it did for Kaiser and Tyrod Taylor. He's getting that ball – making decisive decisions and getting that ball where it needs to be, and it's allowing the offensive line to be able to not have to block pass rushers like Terrell Suggs for 5 seconds.
Yeah, and he has insane pocket presence too, like an insane shift ability. I mean, because, you know, I saw him break out so many times where he could have been sacked, but he ran out of the tackle and somehow made some incredible plays, and like you were saying, some of those are going to Njoku, and I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, Baker and him practice a lot during the preseason and all that, so, you know, they have this comfortability with each other, so I think that really helps, and I think that's why old Stonehands Njoku is turning into Mr. Playmaker Njoku. Right now he's looking pretty good. The one thing where I did, you know, see where I did have a problem with Njoku was the one play to him on was it third down or something, and the ball was right to him. It was right at his hands, and he just dropped it. You know, that's one area of concern, and it's that seems to be something happening a lot with these Brown receivers. I mean, Callaway has been dropping some good passes. But, you know, we were, at the end of the day, we were able to make the plays that we needed, and we got the victory.
Yeah, I think, you know, just listening and the guys that you're mentioning, and Njoku's a second-year guy, Callaway's a rookie. And, I mean, we're playing a lot of young guys that that are going to make mistakes, and that's why, like, today's game was a huge roller coaster. I mean, we held them, we held Baltimore to a field goal. Denzel Ward intercepts the ball on the goal line to keep him out. We get the ball, we go down, bang, go down and score. We're up 6-3. We block a field goal. I mean, it's just a, it's just an up and down roller coaster. And that overtime for only being 10 minutes felt like it lasted about 3 hours. Because I don't know about you, but I was like, what is going on? I felt like there were 17 possessions for both teams in that game.
You know, I'm right there with you. Like that I was, I had my hands to my mouth that entire quarter. I mean, that overtime took so long, I thought I was going to grow old, honestly.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to have a couple kids at that point.
I hear you. And it's only 10 minutes. It's only 10 minutes. But,
You know, and the roller coaster that we were on, you know, part of that, I mean, it has to be said, and I know I'm going to keep beating it like a dead horse, but the refs were a big reason why that game dragged on so much.
Oh, yeah. I don't know the total number of penalties. But, I mean, we had 12 at one point, and then the Ravens, I think, ended up with 3 or 4 penalties. And I know we got through it. So, I mean, there were probably 20 penalties called and accepted in that game. It was unbelievable that game. It was just field goal. We held Baltimore, holding Baltimore to 9 points, 3 field goals after they scored – when they scored 35 on Pittsburgh the Monday night before, is just a testament to how good the Browns can be. And I think it's going to be an up and down roller coaster. Like, we scored 42 last week against the Raiders and lost in overtime. And we come back and score 12 in overtime against the Ravens and get a win. So it's going to be maddening every week just watching them, because they do play a lot of young guys.
Yeah, the defense is definitely going to have weeks like they had against the Raiders. I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, that's just what happens when you're playing a lot of young guys. So, but to see, like you said, to see them do what they did against the Ravens in spite of all that, I mean, they could have took the woe is me attitude, as many penalties that were being called against them. You know, they won this game despite all those penalties. And I think that's a more amazing fact. Despite all those penalties, we won that game. And, you know, usually the most penalized team does not win the game. But in this case, because of our turnover-heavy defense, I mean, because 15 turnovers total now after 2 turnovers in this game. I mean, that's something to behold. I mean, this defense, they may not be top 5 this year, but they're definitely a top 10 defense right now, but they're going to have their bad weeks.
For sure. And then, I mean, just look at the number one pick last year, Myles Garrett, has proven that he is an elite pass rusher, probably one of the top 3 in the league. You have this year's draft was Baker Mayfield and Denzel Ward, 2 guys that are going to start in Cleveland for the next 15 years at we have 3 of the 4, and the 4th one is still up for grabs. We have 3 of the 4 top positions locked down with young guys that can be in Cleveland for the next 15 years. And Garrett at pass rusher, Baker at quarterback, Denzel at lockdown corner, and Harrison at left tackle, still to be determined, but he's looking pretty good too.
Yeah, that looks like an absolute steal right now. Undrafted free agent. I mean, he was out of football for a couple years, and he was a former 5-star recruit. I was critical of the Browns when they made that signing, but that is looking pretty darn good on John Dorsey right now. To be able to pluck guys like that, like we were saying with Jeremy a couple weeks ago, you know, you have to do that. You have to pluck those guys, you know, you have to get your top picks right. I mean, they got the top picks right for once. They got Baker, they got Denzel, you know, they got Garrett the year before. And honestly, one guy that you weren't mentioning in there, I'm impressed with Jabril Peppers. I mean, dude is playing really good now that he's got a legitimate free safety back there with him, so he can play more in the box type of guy. And he's making some plays for us, hard hits, you know, forcing guys to drop passes. You know, I'm serious. I don't like Jabril Peppers on special teams, but on defense, I'm loving Jabril Peppers right now.
I'm with you. I think we need to find a different punt returner, but you're right. Now that we've taken Jabril Peppers from Parma, where he played last year, and put him into the box where he's natural and can play, like, to me here, he's our version of the Honey Badger down in Houston. That's what he plays like for me, and he can play like a nickel back, like a nickel corner. He can play, you know, play on a slot receiver, play on a tight end, and also be a force in a run game rather than playing that free safety. Where now we have Demaryius Randall back there, who is looking like a great free safety for us. I mean, this team can do some damage, and I mean, I don't know how many games this team can win. I think every week we're going to be in the game though to be able to win it. I mean, if you look, we could be 4-0 or 5-0, but you know, we're 2-2-1, which I think is what we are. We're a 2-2-1 team with all the rookies and first and second year guys we're playing. But I mean, we're in game. Now we're in game for being competitive, and whether we win or not, win or lose, it's nice that we're not upset and turning the channel at halftime because we're down 4 scores at halftime like we had been the last couple of years.
Yeah, and like you were saying, if you look at it, we could be 5-0. But you know what? You got to take the NFL season in quarters. So the first four, we were 1-2-1. That's actually pretty good considering where we were at the year before. And then now we're on to the next four. And we started that off 1-0. So 1-2-1 in the first four, started off the next four 1-0. So, you know, that's improvement. This team is looking really good. And, you know, one thing we're talking about with Peppers being a former first round pick, you know, he made a play where he didn't actually make the tackle, but he allowed time for the other guys to come around. I think it was a third down run play on Javoris Allen, and he got back there. He was the first one back there, and Javoris broke the tackle. But because he was back there so quick, it allowed the other guys to get around to the other side and stop him. So, you know, that's what he does. You know, he's a guy who hits and he plays close to the line. And I agree, you know, he could be similar to what the Honey Badger is. Honey Badger gets a little bit more of the turnovers. But I think those may eventually come with the way that he viciously hits people and stuff like that. And then if you look at this Brown secondary, we technically have 3 former first rounders in that defense secondary, because Demaryius Randall, who was a first round pick by the Packers, is back there, and he's playing his more natural position. I mean, the kid was a free safety in college, and the Packers tried to play him at corner, but it just didn't work. And now we got him back at his natural position, and he is flourishing under Greg Williams. I mean, that's something that's got to be noted.
Yes. I mean, that's the offseason work that John Dorsey and his staff did is coming to fruition and before our very eyes. I mean, he's just plucking guys out and, you know, trading, stealing this guy, trading for that guy. And I mean, it's just coming to fruition right now, and it's great to see. And it looks like we can build on our young guys with our veterans like Landry and Randall and, you know, these guys that can lead these guys and get, you know, this is our time to win. In the NFL, you have to hit, and it looks like we've hit on our quarterback first round pick. And this is the time to win because we can build around him until 5 years from now when we have to pay him $100 million. So this is our time to win, and I think John Dorsey knows that, and we hit on our guy. Looks like we hit on our quarterback, and now we can build around him and hopefully make a run the next 4 years, make runs to the playoffs, and hopefully to the big game, the Super Bowl, somewhere down the line.
Yeah, and you know what you're saying about how Landry is one of those guys that Dorsey picked up. Let's look at him. You know, he probably cost us the game in the fourth quarter, you know, when he didn't go out of bounds. I mean, you got to admit that he should have gone out of bounds on that play. And like the announcers are saying, the coaches say that he tries to be Superman. And that was just not a time for you to try and be Superman. And you know what? I know Greg Joseph missed that field goal, but I think that was more than I don't think that was on the kicker on that play. I really feel like that was on Jarvis, but Jarvis at the end of the day came through for us. And that's what we need, is we need guys who will come through for us in clutch situations and, you know, and want to win and are tough as nails. And that's what we get with a lot of these guys. You know, John Dorsey's bringing in the right mindset, you know, and it's awesome to see that.
Yeah. He's changed an entire culture of the Browns in his first, in less than a year. Getting guys like Landry, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get guys that are supremely confident and think that, hey, I can break this tackle and then I can go score a touchdown and we win the game, rather than, you know, hey, I should just step out of bounds, save us that extra 7 or 8 seconds, and we can throw a couple more passes, get closer and win this game in regulation, rather than going to overtime. But, I mean, just you're going to take – with this team, we're going to take the good with the bad right now. And, I mean, right now we're 2-2-1. And if you'd have told me after the first five games we're going to be 2-2-1, I'd have bought that in August. So,
yeah, oh, clearly, yeah, I would have paid good money to have that record.
Yeah, now our next three games in the second quarter of the season, we have the Chargers, winnable game at home, Buccaneers down there, which is a very winnable game, and then we go to the Steelers on the 28th of October for our eighth game of the year, which is going to be – it'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see because we're both completely different teams than we were the first game. We have a different quarterback in Baker, and they're more of an offensive team. They don't really stop anybody anymore, so that game could be really, really fun to watch.
Yes.
Coming couple weeks.
Especially with what the Steelers usually do against rookie quarterbacks. Rookie quarterbacks usually eat them alive. So, you know, we could see a potential shootout in that game. Like you said, we're both completely different teams than what we were. You said we play them week 8?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was hearing rumors that Le'Veon Bell was going to report week 7. So they could also have Le'Veon Bell back that week. So that could be just a whole new wrinkle during this game. Thrown into that game, and with the way the first game was played and James Conner killed us, you know, that could potentially be a season-defining moment for both clubs, you know, depending on where they're at. The Chargers, definitely winnable game, especially if they don't have Joey Bosa. They've been terrible on defense without Bosa. And then who was that? Buccaneers, that's definitely another winnable game because despite their offensive firepower, they are atrocious defensively. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting few weeks for this team.
Yeah, and we're a young team like we've been talking about, and it's just going to be up and down. We're going to have to ride the waves of the season with Baker in the helm. But I'll tell you what, I really like watching him. One thing on offense, I don't know if I just feel like Todd Haley needs to embrace what Baker really is. And Baker is an up-tempo, fast quarterback. Because when he came in, if you remember, when he came in the first game against the Jets, it was right before the half, so they had to be no huddle, hurry up to get down the field, and they end up kicking a field goal. And then today, I think that we need to get – Todd Haley needs to get us out of the huddle and play a little faster and play a little more with tempo. So we can more what I feel is Baker's strengths, what he relied on in college, whipping the ball around the yard and then, you know, getting us into the plays we need to be in. But that's just a thought I had watching the game today. He doesn't feel – the slower it is, the more he doesn't look that comfortable. I mean, he is making plays here and there. But to get him more in a fast-paced offense where he really can thrive and what he's used to, I think would really do wonders for him.
Yeah, there was a couple times today where he had happy feet in that pocket. And if people don't know what I mean by happy feet, I mean by when he was standing back in that pocket, his feet kept moving. Now, you want to be moving in the pocket, but you don't want your feet continuously moving in different directions because then you can't set your feet right and you can't throw – you can't get a good throw on the ball because your feet aren't set right. So, you know, I think that was a lot of the issue too today. I agree. I definitely think Todd Haley definitely needs to – do much more of a fast-paced offense. If you look at a lot of the problems that him and Ben had in Pittsburgh, because there was a noted problem between those two, a lot of times that offense was a lot better. And many people would talk about it. That offense was so much better when they would go to the two-minute offense, even if there was like 11 minutes left in like the first quarter, they would go to that. And the Pittsburgh offense looked so much better. And like you said, the Browns offense looked so much better. And like you said, Baker looked way more comfortable in that, you know, and he was doing what he was doing in college. And with the way the NFL is shifting, you can put more of those college concepts in. It's not like 5 years ago when you tried to put those college concepts in and the NFL just wasn't having it. This is a pass happy league. And, you know, you gotta fit the offense to the quarterback. And I agree. I think we need to move to a more faster-paced offense because I think at the end of the day, it's going to be more comfortable for Baker and he's going to be able to make more plays.
Yeah, I was watching the game today and that's the first thing that hit me was I think we need to go faster and go faster, get more plays off and play more to Baker's strength that way rather than huddling, running this play clock down to 3-4 seconds before we snap it. But getting that playoff, and I think it just, it'll tire out the defense too, because we get those guys, and Njoku is the type of tight end where he's not an inline tight end. He can be split out and be a receiver type. So, I mean, we have the guys to be able to open it up, switch formations, but not switch personnel, which will tire a defense out too. So, I mean, I think, I don't know. I'm just in my head, that's what I was thinking while I was watching the game today. And I'm hoping, I'm thinking Todd Haley probably sees the same thing. And maybe we'll see a little more faster paced offense coming up now once he gets more familiar and settled with Baker as the quarterback. But another thing, we haven't even touched on it because I think it's going to be, I mean, we're both going to agree on this, with a non-call against Jarvis Landry blew my mind.
That was the most egregious non-call I've ever seen in my entire life. How do you not call a legal contact there? You know, we were talking about this before, and, you know, the ball wasn't catchable, so you can't call pass interference. Well, the ball wasn't catchable because there was a legal contact 12 yards down the field, and he was basically tackled.
Yeah, he got knocked over. And like we said before, there's two calls in football that are total judgment calls and can be called every single play. One is holding, and the other is legal contact on a receiver. Because the rule states you're not allowed to contact a receiver 5 yards
more than 5 yards down the field.
But it happens. If you watch an all-22 tape of the NFL, it happens all the time, and the referees call it. And this is one of the reasons why people really buy into the fact that games are fixed, because it is not a consistently called penalty. You can call it whenever you want. And then you don't have to explain why did you call this one or why did you call that one. In fact, when that penalty happened on Landry, I left the house. I wanted to walk outside, and I thought to myself, I'm going to lose my mind if tomorrow morning the NFL 2-minute report or whatever they call it comes out and they admit they missed that call and the Browns ended up losing, because that'd be about the third time in 5 weeks that we've gotten that that distinction of they missed a call and it cost us the game.
Yeah, the NFL already hosed us last week on the fumble that we should have had a touchdown on against the Raiders, so why not hose us again on this call? I mean, if that had happened and we had recorded this after that happened and we lost, you would hear much more anger in my voice right now than what it was. Because, I mean, if you had been a fly on the wall where I was watching the game, oh, my God, I was swearing up a storm, Charlie. Like you said, you had to walk away. I couldn't help it but stand right there and just swear. I was swearing, I was yelling, and it's where, like you said, that's where people do buy in that the NFL is rigged, when those calls aren't made, because it's one of the most inconsistent calls. And their explanation was because the ball was already in the air. Are you kidding me? The ball was already in the air. That's the dumbest. It doesn't matter if the ball was in the air. It's a legal contact. It was 12 yards down the field. How do you not call that? Even when they got together and discussed it, I was like, are you kidding me? It's unbelievable where the reffing is at this point this season.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking to myself, good thing we won that game, or we'd have to put the explicit tag on this episode.
Exactly.
But we got it. We won it. We're 2-2-1 after 5 games, which is it great? I mean, we could be a little bit better, but is it terrible? No, we're in every single game. We're battling. We're fighting. Greg Williams' defense is playing well. Baker, Todd Haley's offense is coming around. And we've got the Chargers next week. So keep tuned. I mean, the Browns are a fun, fun bunch to watch. Thank goodness. It's finally after, I don't know, what is it, 4, 5, 10, 12, 20 years, it feels like the Browns haven't been that fun to watch, but they're finally fun to watch. And so I'm enjoying this fall between the Buckeyes, between the Browns. I mean, it's just fun football in Ohio right now.
It's definitely really fun football in Ohio right now. And honestly, if we want to get deeper into Ohio, I mean, the Bengals are in first place in the division, and, you know, Cincinnati's undefeated. The University of Cincinnati is undefeated. I mean, that, talk about Ohio football being on a roll right now. When you talk about the way Ohio State and the Browns are playing, I mean, look at those other two clubs that we're playing. We don't even talk about them that often, but, you know, they're still doing their thing, you know, and the, like you said, the Browns are in every game. You know, I think that they're they're the modern version of the cardiac kids at this point, honestly. Because you know what? They have our hearts racing that entire game. You know, I honestly, I don't think I'd want it any other way. I'm just glad to see us competing and not giving up.
Yes, and it's fun, fun football. And just looking at scores, we tied the first game, obviously. Lost in the second game by 3 points. Won the third game by four. Lost last week by three and won this week by three. So every game is within 4 points. And, I mean, it's fun. It's fun football to watch. I mean, you're not taking a nap during the Browns game like you did last year. And you're not – I mean, like you said, Bengals are in first place in this division. Those are going to be two fun games between these clubs. Cincinnati's undefeated. The Buckeyes are undefeated. And the Brownies are playing great football. So it's going to be a fun fall here around Ohio and covering them. So I look forward to it. And, you know, we'll get you a breakdown of the Chargers game, Browns Chargers on Friday, and we'll also break down preview the Buckeyes and at Minnesota on Saturday at noon. So that, look forward to that coming on Friday, and we will see you then.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.